Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the 23rd in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas. I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive through questions posed to the participants an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. Today, we are going to be talking about the truth. And including our panel are Neil Lacey, Maria Couch, Gregor Rakowski. So everybody knows who Santa Claus is, right? I'm seeing nods there, so you people in radio land are going to have to trust me. Everybody knows who Santa Claus is.
Absolutely. I've forgotten. I've been told I have a face that's made for radio, so yeah. I'll remember where I am and I'll respond appropriately.
Paul. Okay. Has anyone ever had a conversation about Santa Claus with someone which would give that person the impression that you believed that Santa was real? Have you ever had a conversation with anyone where that person felt that you believed that Santa was real?
Yes, probably a child.
Okay. All right. Maria, you included in that?
Sure. Well, for me personally, it would be when I was a child.
Okay.
But I mean, as an adult, no, but I keep that for children, I guess.
Okay. How about you, Greg?
I would say the same. I have two younger brothers, 10 and 12 years younger than me, and I did not want to make them cry.
All right.
By telling them that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and all that were a big fat lie.
So you included Easter Bunny in as well. All right. Well, can we all admit that Santa is a lie? Santa is a lie that is embraced by our entire culture. A lie, which is the foundation of an enormous industry.
Fair enough.
We all agree about that.
I agree that it's a lie. I'm not. It may end up being the foundation of an enormous industry. I don't know that the lie was perpetuated in the service of that industry. It may have come to pass just inadvertently, and the industry just kind of picked up on it and said, hey, we can use this.
Okay, but they are related. The lie and the industry, which you agree is enormous,
yes,
are related.
Because,
okay.
Yeah.
So none of us is entitled to get on a high moral pedestal with the claim that we never lie. We all have lied. But is the lie that is Santa Claus a harmful, malevolent lie?
Malevolent.
Malevolent lie.
There you go.
Can you see any benefit to the lie that is Santa Claus? Start with you, Neil.
Yeah, for retailers. That's the only thing I see that.
Do you see a benefit for retailers?
Mm-hmm.
Do retailers need a benefit, though?
They don't need any kind of benefit. I believe this thing was, and I'm not a history buff, but it came to America, what, about 1850 from some kind of German myth or
Dutch
yeah. myth? And they thought, wow, this is a good way for us to raise revenue in the middle of winter time. So,
okay, Maria, what do you think? Is there any malevolence to the lie, or is it a beneficial lie?
Well, I don't know that I necessarily agree that it's a stone cold lie that we're dealing with here.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's a little more nebulous than that. I mean, it's symbolic in a lot of ways. I mean, there's truth to be found in there and a symbolic teaching of, you know, doing what's right, and there's rewards for that.
Where's the truth? Where's the truth that you find in Santa Claus?
Doing what's right, and there's rewards for doing what's right, you know? It's far more complex than a monetary thing. You know, we can get into consumerism, and I think that's what you were getting at, issues with that. But I also feel like there's truth in, you know, teaching what's right and doing what's right. I don't think it's so black and white.
So is what's right and what we're teaching is childhood behavior? Is that what you're talking about what is right?
Somewhat. I think it's a simplistic way of teaching what's right. I mean, we have Dutch, we have German, we have no Norwegian roots. We also have, I mean, dating farther back than that, there's indigenous ways that are sort of like Santa Claus as well, telling stories that are symbolic in ways to maybe perpetuate values for individuals and for groups, and yes, for children.
And Santa Claus promotes those kind of values.
To some extent, yes. Yeah, depending on how you're using it.
If we're going to go back to truths, my truth in this particular bit of the conversation is it was appropriated from a Holland tradition. Santa Claus comes by, and he. This is very interesting. I got this from a David Sedaris story. He's always accompanied by 6 to 8 black men. Right? They don't even know how many of these people are accompanying him, but they're accompanying him, and they go throughout the town. And this is kind of a precursor to our tradition, which was appropriated from Holland and other places, which, let's be honest, our culture is very good at doing that. But as I think the question that you're asking is that is there any harm in telling a white lie? And that's what I hear you getting at in the course of this. Have you harmed anybody by saying Santa Claus exists and you need to be a good boy or a good girl and behave properly, and tomorrow morning you get to wake up and open your presents, or you get a big lump of coal? Well, it can be a harmless white lie. It can be a harmful white lie, and that it perpetuates greed, and it perpetuates the idea that the reason that you do things is not out of an altruistic sense of trying to get to the greater good or a truth, but you do them to get rewarded. So white lies can, you know, I wouldn't want to hurt somebody who's having a rough day and say, hey, you look horrible this morning. Did you wake up on the wrong side of the bed and the cat scratched you and all that, and find out it's just a normal day for them, but they're feeling really badly? You want to say, hey, you look pretty good.
That's how they look all the time.
Exactly. You don't want to tear them down. But there's a lot of aspects to this what is truth question that we're dealing with.
Oh yeah. I hope by the end of the hour we can get to that. Is it in our nature to accept the real truth, or rather believe what we want? For example, the creation of the universe. There's a belief by some people that the creation of the universe occurred in 7 days. And there's a belief by others that there was a big bang that occurred 14.5 billion years ago that created the universe. So is it in our nature to accept the real truth, or rather believe what we want about the truth? What do you think is more likely for us as anthropological beings, humanoids, to believe in that regard?
I'll jump out and grab that really quickly. I think that depends in a large part on where you grew up, where you reside. It also has to do with how old you are. I think as a younger person, you're more interested in questing for the truth and in pushing your boundaries and finding out what the truth really is. Whereas opposed, I've watched it happen to my parents. As people get older, it's almost anthropomorphically as a species, we don't want to be told the truth. We want to be told that we were right. We want to be told that the truth is what we knew all along. And that, I think, is where we're running into the real divisions that we have politically these days. There's a large group of the population that wants to be told, hey, all this stuff that I've believed all over, I'm right about it. And you guys are wrong trying to push me out of my comfort zone.
Do you feel that way, Neil?
I've always looked for the truth in things.
Now, that's just you, though. I'm talking about people generally.
I think he was right in the fact that people want to see what they want to see.
Uh-huh. Okay. What do you think about that, Maria?
Well, I think I would personalize it as, you know, someone who's done a lot of research. I know that we are inherently biased, and we seek out to confirm those biases. And I have to accept that I'm there on the bell curve. I am in the mean, right? So I'm biased, and I'm going to confirm my biases, and we do that inherently. We have to struggle against that. We have to fight against that. And when we get to a place where we're not doing that, we have to continue to struggle against that and fight against that.
So we need to recognize that that is the case. But if we're going to be real as far as our self-actualization as humans, we want to try to fight against it to the degree where we're not necessarily going to believe what we want, but believe what is real, what we see, what the evidence presents.
I want solid facts for the truth. That's what I want.
Is there such a thing as God's truth? Did you ever hear the phrase, God's truth? Is there such a thing as God's truth?
Well, that's really not my thing. So I'm not going to answer the question.
You can stay away from that one. How about you, Maria? You think about that at all?
Sure. I think it's how it reaches you. It's like he was saying, there's so many contextual factors to an individual, right? Where you are, your place in time, your age, you know, your gender, your race, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, like all of these things are contextual factors. And, you know, each of us wears a pair of glasses, a lens, right, that was shaped throughout childhood, throughout our life as we go through.
So can I interpret what that to mean to be that you don't really look at the phrase God's truth as something that could be like standardized or fully actualized? Or
not necessarily. I think that there's a lot of ways up the mountain and that we could probably in general agree on that there's, you know, pieces of God's truth that we would all put together. But it's personal. You know, I think that, you know, what he would think would be different than what I thought, different than what he thought.
Okay, Gregory, God's truth.
You know, it's I have to go back and say that what we're talking about, if we really haven't started this discussion out with any definition of our forms, and I didn't want a definition of our terms, and I didn't want to hijack anything by making us do that. But what you're talking about here is to my way of understanding, and we can discuss this endlessly from a believer's standpoint, from an agnostic standpoint, from an atheist standpoint. But what we're talking about with respect to truth is we're talking about truth as an archetypal form. Okay, the perfect form of truth, as Plato would understand it, is, well, we have our truths down here. We are here on this planet. We are blinded by what we perceive. That's the myth of what took place in the cave, if
that's
you know your
the
Plato.
Big, the big noose, little noose, yeah. Oh,
yeah, so the problem is with what we see, we are limited in our perceptions. Plato maintained that the actual truth is probably not attainable by us, but it does exist. You go a little bit further and you look at St. Augustine, he extrapolated on what Plato talked about good forms, and he just took one of the O's and the word form out of it and said, well, it's God. It's just God that caused all. God is the truth. God is the result of all these good things. And they tried to synthesize at the time what was the Jerusalem's philosophy, which was the faith-based philosophy, with the Greek philosophy, which was the faith, which was the philosophy of more of an empirical way.
More nature.
More nature, exactly. Less supernature, more nature. The gods are still there in the Greek philosophy, but there's two completely different archetypal realms that we're talking about there.
But can we agree that there is a segment of the population out there that would embrace the phrase of God's truth?
Oh, absolutely.
And have a large degree of certainty.
Yes.
That they know what that is. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's address this next question to that population. What is the criteria by which we can determine whether a statement qualifies as God's truth? How are we going to determine by somebody making a statement? I'll come up with a statement. You cannot be saved unless you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. That is a statement that I'm sure we've heard by different people that we've encountered throughout our life. Now, would that statement qualify in their minds as God's truth?
Yes.
Okay, so what would be the criteria which would allow that qualification to occur?
It would be their belief system, their collective consciousness as Christians, and the book that they go by, the Bible.
Okay. You agree with that?
You know, I have to weigh in kind of from an agnostic standpoint here, because I resist using
that,
the terms like
that's permitted.
God's
agnosticism
truth.
Is permitted.
first of all, I want to say that I'm not saying I don't believe that God exists. All right. That's right. Between you and whatever you believe. But I am saying that referring to this as God's truth, it kind of gives us a prejudicial idea, because we're saying, well, okay, which God? How many gods are there in the history of man? There's hundreds, really.
That's an important component to our conversation.
Right. The ones that exist now basically are the king the God of Israel, right? Mm-hmm. And the other one that we're dealing with is Allah. We also have...
Well, actually, they're pretty much the same God. They both came from Abraham.
There's significant differences, though, and that's a whole different
hour-long
discussion.
The origin of Allah, Yahweh, came from Abraham.
Yes. But
so basically what I'm trying to get at here, and I see Neil grimacing over there because this is something that he has difficulty with. But anyway, let me just get to this point here, that by certain people embracing, and I'm talking about the evangelical movement, embracing what they have now as the leader, as their political leader, which would be President Trump. Is there any disagreement with me characterizing Trump as a leader of the evangelicals? Okay.
No, he's pretty much got their ideological.
Yeah. Right. Are they going to be able to convince themselves, us, the population in general, that God's truth, as they interpret it, applies with Trump as well?
Yes, but I don't think he's a good enough spokesman for religion in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would appear that he seems to break rules pretty much at will, that we as citizens have learned that that's bad behavior.
Right.
Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
So I'm as confused as the next guy on that.
So you're asking in terms of changing this point of view, or what?
No. I'm just trying to analyze what we're seeing.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the evangelical community believing that they are motivated by God's truth and following what they perceive to be God's truth, and still embracing the idea that Donald Trump is their political leader.
Well, it's part of it. It's the confirmation bias. It's this, you know, has to be part of this. And so it has to fit in every way, sort of like you get with a lot of organized religions. But the thing is like, if we look back through history, how do we argue with divine right? I mean, how do you reason with divine right?
That was God's truth too back then.
Absolutely, it was God's truth.
Also justified slavery. God's truth to the Mormon people.
Correct.
Said you can't have black people in the priesthood until 1967, when they said,
right.
"Oh, we've had a revelation." So we go back to what I said earlier about
women bishops. Yes.
So what we go back to is the problem that the truth is a problem of what we perceive at the time. God's truth, as we perceive it, we're not capable of perceiving because we will never have all the information. It's changing. It's always changing.
Right.
There's always new information coming out. A couple years ago, plastic bags, the way to go. They're going to save the planet, right? Save the forests. Well, guess what? This year, plastic bags, not so great anymore. Now we're going back to paper. So you make your assessments of what is truthful based on the information that you have at the time. And I think what we have here is we have a situation where there's a lot of us that are trying to bring this thing forward and saying, look, let's advance the truth. Let's find out what we can use factually to find out what's really going on. And then we have a bunch of these people who are self-biased and saying, no, I don't want to know the truth. I just want to know the truth as it pervades, as it applies to my worldview, as it applies to what I know because of my beliefs. That's what I'll accept. Anything else, I'm not accepting it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to get this Obama thing out of the way here. Right-wing Obama. Talking. Yeah, Obama, yeah. We're segueing into a different direction here. Right-wing talking head pundits are quick to accuse Obama of being a liar by pointing out the two great big lies he told during his presidency. The first is the red line that the Syrian president crossed by using chemical weapons against his people after Obama warned him about that line. Those of us who can recall that after Assad was pressured by the international community to give up a big cache of chemical weapons, after Obama pressured him by talking about this red line. So is it fair to conclude that Obama's red line declaration was a lie, as many right-wing pundits like to do?
No.
You don't think it was a lie?
Posturing. It's a different situation. It's like a game of poker where you're bluffing. I think it was unfortunate. My personal feelings on that is that was one of the things, the ways in which I was disappointed with the Obama presidency is that I felt that a lot of times when they did go out and they tried to draw a line, so to speak, they didn't back it up with anything.
Well, what about the idea that he did, through Kerry's negotiations, take this huge cache of chemical weapons and deliver them off to Putin to get him out of the war zone?
Hey, you know, if you start believing those kind of justifications for conversations, I'm going to believe that Donald Trump is responsible for peace in the North Korean peninsula right now. And I simply don't believe that. It's just he was in the right place at the right time. He didn't bring this to fruition because of his tough negotiating techniques. That's not why this took place.
You don't think Obama set that ball in motion.
It set the ball in for the peace on the North Korean Peninsula, or for the
state. The cache of chemical weapons that went to Putin.
Like I said, I don't think of that as a truth. I think of that as more as a negotiating tactic, and that has very little to do with the truth.
Okay, but
that's a bluff.
It's been termed as a lie, though.
Well, that's
one of his big lies.
Every word out of his mouth has been termed a lie by the conservative pundits. I mean, he didn't say one true thing his entire time in office.
I only heard two. I only heard that one.
Every time I turn around, ho, was Obama's fault.
It's Obama's lie, Obama's fault. Yeah, I know.
Marie, you have anything about that, or?
I mean, I would have to agree with what they're saying. You know, what I'm hearing is that with Obama, I feel like in a lot of ways he's sort of a pariah. I know that we're talking about truth, but I mean, there's so many people who couldn't even tell me what gubernatorial candidate means, right? Who were totally not political. And then we have Obama and suddenly they're insanely political. And you have to ask yourself, why? What is it about Obama that's so different? This is another male throughout history being president who's highly educated. What is so different about Obama?
Can we be honest about it?
Yeah,
if we're on about truth, can we be honest about what was different?
We're trying.
He's a black man.
He was the first black president.
Yep.
Right. I gave up listening to presidential addresses until Obama got elected.
Right.
And I would sit there and I would listen. And I think, well, this guy's actually telling me something that I understand. He's entertaining to listen to. He's getting his point across. And at no time I thought the man was lying to me. Like, I don't even look at Trump on the television because everything comes out of his mouth is a lie to me. There's no way I can substantiate that, but he's got a past history of that behavior.
Yeah.
We are Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Today we're talking about the truth. Working through it, we have Neil Lacy, Maria Couch, and Gregor Rakowski. I want to get this last Obama lie out of the way here. His second lie was the statement that the Affordable Care Act would allow you to go to the doctor of your choice. Some HMO networks do not allow this flexibility of choice. Was Obama's statement a lie or a mistake? What's the difference?
That was a lie of unintended consequences. What he meant was he meant to say that the big, as I understand it, the big argument about the run-up to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act was that the idea of government-sponsored HMOs would drive other insurance companies out of business, all right? This is what the conservatives were all up in arms about at the time. They said, you're going to eliminate the competition in the workplace. You're going to, in the insurance market, you're going to drive legitimate businesses out of business because you've got government-subsidized healthcare taking over for them. And all that happened there was that if you had looked at it a little more closely, you would have figured out, yes, some will fold. Some healthcare companies will fold as a result. This is
like
business.
All businesses.
This happens, mm-hmm. Okay? But it was probably a little bit optimistic of him to say that flatly. Just to say, if you want to keep your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Well, right. There's going to be some changes. By and large, if you want to keep your doctor, it's going to be okay for you to keep your doctor. But there will be changes.
Most people were allowed to, some couldn't because of that particular network they were in.
Well, there's other things going on too than just Obama or just Trump, right? There's whole political parties, there's systems, there's things going on, and people sort of say the best they can with the knowledge that they have out of that. Yeah, I guess in some ways it was a lie. But when we're talking about lies, if we're comparing other lies or other politicians, this is apples to oranges.
We're going to do that later, compare lies.
Right.
So, Neil, you already commented on that. Okay. My research on Hitler basically came from two books, The Study of Tyranny by Alan Bullock and The Nightmare Years by William Shire. In both studies, it was Hitler's utilization of lies that proved to be his most effective tool in his quest for power and world domination. He lied all the time, mm-hmm. Hitler did. Sound familiar?
Father of lies.
Does the comparison of the technique of lying for political gain with Trump and Hitler raise any concerns?
Of course it raises all kinds of concerns for me. A while back I was reading something that the administration doesn't believe that the Holocaust happened. Now, I don't know if that's a lie or not, but I was brought up and I was shown pictures that my dad had of when he was in Germany after World War II and his unit was ordered to go through the concentration camps to make sure that everybody knew that wasn't a lie.
The photographic evidence was pretty overwhelming mm-hmm. that it did occur. Yeah.
So do I think he's telling the truth? No.
So the concern about Hitler lying all the time to get political gain or to just maneuver things around as far as he was gaining power through the Reichstag, and Trump's tweeting, raise any concerns for you, Maria?
Well, I would want to be careful in this comparison here. I think it's rather large, but on one hand, on the other hand, I mean, never thought I would give Hitler any credit, but he was savvy in his lies, right? There was tactics in there. It wasn't just blatant lies to cover his behind.
Oh, they were pretty blatant. Right? Pretty blatant.
Well, there were, but I feel like there was a buildup to that, right? You had the savvy, insidious part of it, and then blatant. I don't know. I guess for me, I don't want to give Trump that much credit, right? That it's sort of the savvy, insidious, and then the blatant. However, I'm positioned in this place and time, right, where everything is like a slap in the face. Everything goes against my belief system. On the other hand, I do see how it's this slowly tearing away at things, you know, and using a belief system, like using religion, using things like that, where it's sort of the creeping in of like divine right, like we talked about, like this is God's will, this is, you know, a way of doing something. And that is wherein I see the comparison, where it's really turning people really deeply internally within their values. And that's extremely dangerous.
Comparison, Gregor?
I'm not going to draw a comparison between Nazism and any current party. I don't want to draw comparisons between individuals in the past who I extremely dislike and individuals in the present who I extremely dislike. But I will say it actually is, it's brutally apparent how effective this administration has been just with respect to what Neil said just now. He said, I heard that this administration didn't believe in the Holocaust. I don't know whether to believe that or not. That is exactly what this administration set out to
do. I don't believe anything I see in the news
anymore. Which is exactly what this administration set out to achieve. And they have been unbelievably successful in that respect. And it's a shame. We have reached a point, I forget the exact quote. There's a marvelous quote that Stephen Hawking put out in the late 70s, I think, when he was lamenting a time in the future when education and elite people who want to do good are mistrusted, they are pilloried, they're vilified. And instead you have, I won't say that Trump is another Hitler, but I think we can all agree that he is a demagogue.
Yes.
I mean, demagoguery is a pretty specific definition in the dictionary. And if you look it up, you're going to have a hard time distancing it from a lot of what he's doing.
Let me qualify my statement about I don't believe anything I see. I look for the truth in various ways. Last night on The Daily Show, they had Andrea Mitchell on there. Did you guys see that? She was talking about the truth and that you just don't see it like you would. Would I believe her over Sean Spicer? Oh, in a New York second. Would I believe Huckabee over, say, any other network news? Anybody else, yes. Is that the end all? No. It's we each have to at least try and find the truth and make an informed decision based on that truth. And the internet is not the way to get the truth.
Oh, no.
Unless you know how to filter out the BS to get at the meat of the issue.
Even then, it's tough. They're getting better and better at it.
Yes, you're right.
The lies are looking more reliable than the truth these days. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that you brought up Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and this is something that just floors me. It's amazing. She is Mike Huckabee's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He is a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
She is a pastor's daughter. I don't know if this is the Marilyn Manson thing where they're falling farther from the tree than they should, but I don't understand how she gets up on stage as a practicing Christian and says what she says in defense of this administration with what they're doing. I really don't understand that.
Yeah. Let's go back to our earlier comment about God's truth. You know, if you're referring back to the practicing Christian.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you paid somebody enough, they'll say anything you want.
This is the truth. That's how that is why we have female commentators on Fox News, for Pete's sake. I mean, I don't see how anybody could work in that environment and spew what they spew and be the butt of that joke like that. That's just, anyway.
When you hear Trump utter the phrase fake news, how do you feel about that? Go to you first, Maria. How do you feel about Trump saying fake news, that's just fake news?
Well, for me, it's a little bit insane. Like, that's like, and I'm not making a comparison between, you know, status, but that's like someone who cuts up meat trying to tell me how, you know, to cure a sinus infection. You know what I mean? Like, it's absurdity to me. And we're talking about news and fake news and truth and looking at information. Even within a scientific community, there are published articles that we look at and we scrutinize and we're like, these methods are faulty. Like, this is not really approximation towards truth, right? And even when you have truth within science, which is done in a certain way that hopefully we can collectively agree upon, you need a body of that. Like, you need a lot of that to go towards it. So I think to say that and be so sweeping, like, you know, it's fake news. I have difficulty.
You're disturbed by that. What about you, Neil? Yeah. Fake news bother you?
Actually, the term fake news bothers me because it seems to incite a reaction from some of our politicians towards journalism and press people.
Right.
That's my biggest problem. If our journalists and press people are scared to do their job, we as a country are lost, and we'll never get any kind of real truth if our journalists.
So you think that phrase is scaring the journalists?
I think it's inciting a group of people to intimidate journalists and press people.
And discredit them,
yes.
Gregor?
Anytime I hear him say fake news, I know it's something I better pay attention to because it's something he's threatened by.
Right.
The truth is that, this whole fake news, this is the guy that he gets everything that he knows from Fox and Friends. At the start of Obama's presidency, he spent two and a half years leading the charge for the birther movement, which was so obviously a fake news thing to me and anybody. Mm-hmm. You have his supporters routinely have had meetings during the campaign where they got together and listed the names of the people that were in body bags that the Hillary Clinton murder machine had. At what point in time is your veracity, is your truthfulness injured by the lies that you've told in the past that people look at you and say, he says fake news these days. And I just go, are you kidding me?
Right.
You have no authority. You have absolutely no reliability whatsoever with me.
We are Bridging the Gap on KVRF, Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Today we're talking about the truth with Neil Lacy, Maria Koch, Gregor Rakowski. Anyone in here ever read George Orwell?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Animal Farm, 1984?
Yeah, yeah.
Have we entered a post-democracy Orwellian universe?
Absolutely. Look at Newspeak. It's all around you.
So we're already there?
We are there. We have passed that particular rabbit hole quite some time ago, I think. Somebody else said, it was one of the late night hosts who said that the amazing thing about this administration is just when you think they can't go any lower, they blow through the cellar and continue to fall. And it's just this is, from an Orwellian standpoint, I don't see how we get any closer to actual fiction that Orwell was writing. You know, it's being writ large here in this administration.
So he wasn't a fiction writer, he was a prophet. What do you think, Maria? Are we already there? Or are we entering there? Or how far are we from there?
It feels like it. I would agree that it feels like it. I feel that way a lot. I feel sort of disillusioned and like, what's going on? But at the same time, I'm hopeful. I think we've been here before in different ways.
McCarthy days.
And the pendulum always swings. The pendulum swings. The paradigm changes. I'm an optimist, right? So I feel like there's conversations like this. There's things going on. We might feel a certain way, but I feel like that can incite change. You know, if we look at the youth, what are the youth doing now? They're pissed off. You know, they're up and coming. They're doing things. I appreciate that. I feel like, and I have hope in, that the paradigm, the pendulum is going to swing.
We talked about this on earlier shows about the youth being actually the leaders are the ones that are going to straighten this thing out.
Right.
What about that, Neil?
I think we're as close to 1984 as we can get. And I hope the pendulum swings the other direction pretty darn quick.
Yeah.
Because something has to change.
Okay, I just got this little note here from our tech guy who said, irony, we go to late night talk shows to get the real news. I remember when Jon Stewart first came on board, he was the only one I would listen to that I would trust. This is what we're going to hear, you know, the Daily Show. So thanks for that, Mike. Is the truth really important? Why would any individual prefer lies to the truth? Can we come up with an explanation as to why lies would be preferable to the truth? I know we talked earlier, we talked earlier about the perspective, you know, person's belief system. Anything in addition to that?
Well, I was always told and enforced by my parents that it's easier to tell the truth than it is to remember a lie. But in our current political climate, it's easier to tell a lie.
Well, when you tell a lie, if there's things that are questioned about that lie, you always have to readjust what you're doing to make that lie work, and you end up forgetting more about the lie that you told than it would have been if you stayed with the truth the whole time. So what do you think, Maria? Is the truth really important to us now, or are we just stuck in this belief system?
The truth is of the utmost importance. I believe that the truth is important even to individuals who maybe, in my opinion and our opinion, are not even rooted in the truth, right? The truth is...
They're not rooted in the truth, but it's still important to them?
Well, because people aren't feelingless, emotionless automatons, right? There's paths and there's roads and journeys that brought them to where they are. They have feelings, they have hopes, they have dreams, right? To some extent, those are rooted in things that are affront to my existence as a woman, as an Indigenous person, things like that. The truth is important because of facts, because of science, because of these things, because of ideologies that are benevolent and altruistic. It's of the utmost importance. It's how we progress as a people, and it's how we care about other people as we do that.
So what's going on now? You feel sort of an assault on us all, basically.
I do. I feel that way, even on individuals who think that they're doing something for themselves. And to some extent, it's basic in-group, out-group, you know. They're the in-group. They want to believe the lie, right? There's you. You're in my group. You can do nothing wrong. They're outside of my group. They're bad. It's basic in that sense.
How important, Gregor?
I'm going to quote Voltaire here for you. Those who can make you believe an obscenity can make you commit an atrocity. And this just goes back to if you listen to enough of the right-wing ideologues, if you buy into this extremely divisive ultra-right-wing claptrap that we've got going on right now, you're going to see more of what happened in Charleston, South Carolina.
Let's also talk about the fact that the description of immigrants was they're animals.
And infestation.
And look what happened to those children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you talk about leaving obscenities, you allow atrocities. That whole immigration thing, I think, can be characterized as an atrocity.
Absolutely. And this is in part and parcel. It's because we have a large group of people in the United States who don't want to know the truth. They because the truth puts them outside of their comfort range. Mm-hmm. Guess what? This is not America. Is not a shining beacon on a hill that it used to be anymore. If you look at the situation of the world today, and pardon me for seeming rather pessimistic, but if you look at the refugee situation in the world today, it seems to me more like we are a lifeboat in a whirlpool of sewage. And that's what these people believe, and that's what they want to believe. You can affect the truth in certain ways by your outlook and how you respond to things, but that is where we're going these days. We have a lot of people in this nation who think that's exactly what we are. We're not a beacon on a hill. We're a lifeboat and a whirlpool of sewage, and the more people that we let in this lifeboat, it's going to sink. And that's why that's one of the reasons we're being so recalcitrant in our willingness to admit more immigrants these days, is because we have this right wing beating the drums about illegal crossings of the border. Well, they're not illegal if they're crossing at an entry point. Well, you know, and it's just the sheer number of things that have taken place. I'm sure you've all seen in the news the most recent one I saw yesterday, there was a Marine who served in Iraq, and his wife was deported with one of their children because of this new implementation of this. It's just insane, because we're being so zero tolerance, because we're not looking for the truth. We're just looking for things to assuage the feelings of the people who want to be right. They want to know that they've had the truth on their side all along. And it's perverting goodness by creating these horrible situations.
The word I like to use is cruel. It's a very cruel approach.
It is. That's true.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it is, and it's sort of like, well, where does the truth begin and end? Because most people don't want to know the truth. They don't want to know history. Majority of individuals that, and on my father's side, you know, we're from Monterrey, Mexico, and it's like we lived here in the lower part of Texas before arbitrary lines were drawn. Like, this is our native land. You know, people don't want to hear that. They don't want to think about that. They want to draw a line and forget everything that came before it, including history.
History is written by the victors. So that's the problem that we have with that.
Let's talk about propaganda for a minute, which can be based on truth or lies. For instance, Obama gets Bin Laden, finally, justice for 9/11. Okay, that statement there, pure propaganda. Mm-hmm. With a large element of truth, he actually did get Bin Laden. Okay, and here's another piece of propaganda. The largest inauguration crowd ever, period. No truth at all to that, right? Okay, when we are subjected to propaganda from whichever side, is the truth an important component of acceptance to or believability, or does it matter? Does the truth matter in regard to what is believed when we're talking about propaganda? How important is the truth in regard to its believability?
It is, and this goes back to what I said, that everyone wants the truth or thinks that they believe the truth to some extent, and it also goes back to Hitler. It's you're getting bits of truth. You're getting maybe, who knows, 90, 85, but it's becoming less and less and less to where you've given enough truth.
Actually,
to where,
I need to correct you on that. He started lying from the get-go.
He was lying from 1923.
Okay.
Big time. There is large documentation.
No, you're right about that. But I guess I'm talking about the savvy, insidious way of lies. This could be anyone. Where it becomes less and less and
so
less.
So let me ask you
truth,
this.
Where you can just lie.
Would you characterize Trump's lies as insidious as well?
They are. I mean, I guess I don't want to give him credit, but yeah, they have been. Because they've been slow, right? They've been sort of these subtle things, which to me are jarring, like, you know, calling immigrants, you know, rapist and things like that.
From down the escalator,
but for
you started that.
A lot of people, though, that's subtle. For a lot of people, that's subtle. To just imply that a section of immigrants are bad, right? When it actually implies that all are. But it's sort of a subtle thing to now where we're like, you know, where people are in need and nobody can come in. You know,
well, he likes to go ahead and talk about immigrants as animals, but then he always wants to say, well, that's just MS-13 I'm talking about.
Right.
But really, he's conflating the animal term to include these little
kids. Sure, but how is that not racist to say this is a good one and this is a bad one? This is a good brown person and this is a bad brown person.
Mm-hmm.
We do that with white people.
Calling them criminals.
Right.
Okay, we wouldn't even be having this conversation if the Trump base hadn't drunk the Trump Kool-Aid. That Kool-Aid overwhelmingly comprised of lies permeated with hate. Now, the purpose of this show is to bridge the gap that divides us. My question is, how can we engage in any ideological side? How can any ideological side engage with the other if we can't use the truth as the basis for discussion? When we can't even agree to what the truth is, how are we going to engage the other side? And I think, but before the show started, Gregor, you were talking about that. To a degree that you're almost, well, we're going to call Maria our optimist and you our pessimist.
Probably guilty of that. You know, I tried for a long time to engage with people on the other side of the aisle. And, you know, the truth is, if you're going to say that we have never been this divided in history, or you're not paying attention to history,
right.
You can go back to McCarthyism. You can go back to Preston Brooks and Charles Sumner. We have always been politically divided, and our political divisions and disagreements have been at times violent, painful, and televised. Okay, so right now, I'm kind of at a loss because I've tried to be understanding. I've tried to be logical. I've tried to help people perceive that. And let's be honest, what we're talking about is we're talking about the introduction of Kellyanne Conway's alternative facts line. Okay. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as alternative facts. Let's be clear about that from the get-go. There is the truth. And if you're trying to say that something other than the truth took place, well, you're lying. It's not.
No, we're basically talking about the belief in those alternative facts. Portion of a population.
It's what you're willing to believe. And the fact is that there is a portion of the population that is so willing to believe this that they will not be reasoned with. You can't. You're wasting your time. You're wasting your time talking to them.
No, Maria, you agree with that? That we're wasting our time talking to them?
To some extent, yeah. It's like, don't cast your pearls before swine, right? That sounds terrible, but it's like, you don't waste your time in some cases. And that just goes back to your feeling. You can tell what's going on and where this is going. That doesn't mean that you don't have compassion for people or still find ways to respect and care about people, even though you're at complete odds in your value system and your belief system.
You know, you're a big truth guy. I've been hearing that today. You're a strong believer in the truth. How do we get it across to people that don't even want to accept the truth as you see it?
Well, first of all, I think there's a segment that will never, ever change their mind. What they see is what they believe, and they're going to ram that down your throat no matter what you do.
So you believe like these two, that we're wasting our time?
Not necessarily.
Okay. There's a segment of the population that is exactly what he's exactly right.
And then I was up in Fairbanks 2 weeks ago, and I met a fella from the other side of the aisle. And we sat down and we had a nice long conversation. I thought to myself, I could work with this person if I was in such a place to do that. And he came across to me, and we came under the understanding that there is hope if we can get people talking. But we will always, and it's not just the right, it's also the left.
Right.
So we need to get those people segregate them people out, and the rest of us need to get together and
get rid of the communists and the Nazis, and the rest of us will have a good time.
Right? It's about becoming human before one another. That's really, when you see each other as human beings, then you can affect change.
Exactly right. Now, back on Trump and his demeanor and his storytelling, is what I like to call it, there's got to be something else going on there. Onset of dementia, something, because no right person would say some of the things he does in public. That's the part I don't understand. And that's the part I wonder why we haven't explored. But that's just me.
Well, it has been reported that Trump has said, and I think this may have come from The Art of the Deal, I'm not really sure, that if you say something enough times, true or not, people start believing it. No collusion. No collusion.
Actually, that was Jebbles who said
that. Witch hunt. Fake news. Who's going to pay for the wall? Is Trump's theory legitimate?
Well, the original progenitor of that theory was Jebbles. It was Joseph Jebbles. It was not Trump. And that was, if you say something long enough and forcefully enough, people will accept it as the truth. And I think what has happened in this country, if you look at the 1% and the people that are in charge right now, part of the problem is that when you concentrate the wealth in this small percentage of the people that are doing the ruling, what we have is an oligarchy. And at this point in time, they are so wealthy that, and I think Trump falls into this category, even though he's not as wealthy as he would like us to believe, he just doesn't care anymore. He can say anything he wants, and he can walk it back. He knows that a certain percentage of his supporters will support him no matter what. And the rest of us, it's just, oh, hey, shiny keys, what's going on tomorrow? You know, he has to deal with the blowback today. I have never seen a man who suffered as little repercussion or any sort of adverse reaction from such bad behavior over his entire life. Nothing bad has ever happened to this man. Nothing bad. He continues to come out smelling like a rose. I don't get it.
Well, he had some bankruptcies. Just kind of set him back a little bit.
You know, when he said that he could shoot somebody in the middle of a New York street and walk off scot-free, that was a telling thing for me.
It was.
If you and I said that out on that street out there, we'd have every cop within 50 miles.
Somebody would be calling 911. That's right.
So things got to change.
Yeah.
While lying has been and remains a viable tool in Trump's political toolbox, Robert Mueller has something in his legal toolbox that he has used quite effectively in his investigation. Lying to the FBI and federal prosecutors is a federal crime and has resulted in guilty pleas from Michael Flynn, George Papadopoulos, Rick Gates, and Alex Van der Zwaan, all for making false statements to the FBI. So, from a legal institutional perspective, lying isn't completely a protected practice, even though cops are still allowed to lie when trying to extract confessions from suspects. But do the results of Mueller's probe give us hope that the truth may once again become a desirable American virtue? Trump's lying, getting away with it. Mueller's saying nothing except handing out indictments and guilty pleas for people for lying. So does that give us hope?
I worry that if the president is tried to impeach him or something comes out of this, I think we're going to have some issues civil-wise. That's what scares me the most because of the crazy factor.
So the thing about the Mueller investigation that you're most fearful about is the civil disobedience erupting into violence?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's not really the question. The question
no, I know,
is,
but...
Is the Mueller utilizing the fact that it is illegal to lie in certain circumstances make lying kind of like more of a pejorative term as opposed to something that is embraced by, you know, both Hitler and Trump?
Well, perjury is a crime.
Pardonable offense.
Yes, it is.
Everybody in that group, nobody at this level ever suffers any repercussions for their ill actions. Everybody in that group will be pardoned by Trump. And if and when Trump gets hung up on anything that Mueller comes up with, Pence will pardon him after he's removed from office. This is not anything. You had best not have any. I need to see somebody doing a perp walk to get me feeling better about life, because at this level, that's not going to happen. It just doesn't happen at this level. I mean, when was the last major political figure
Nixon.
Saw really, even what happened to him? Yeah. Impeached, resigned, pardoned. Mm-hmm. People at this level do not do the time. They don't.
Well, we're not really talking about time. I'm just talking about hope for the truth.
Well, that's why I don't have hope, is because in order for the truth to flourish, evil and lies have to be shown that there is some comeuppance, okay? And we are seeing that there is no comeuppance coming down the road for behaving badly.
Ms. Optimist over there, what do you think?
Well, you're saying justice, right?
Justice is blind and justice is on her deathbed from where I'm looking.
In that sense, I don't think that it gives me hope, but what do I have to hope in? You know, and it goes back to what you're saying, like really what could be the outcome? What could happen here? And if we look at what has been happening, that's probably going to keep happening.
Okay. So not so hopeful. Thanks. All right. I got another question here for you all from our tech guy. He asked, how do you recognize something as the truth?
Let's start with me.
Okay.
If it's the internet, and the French word for internet is BS, okay? there's a hierarchy of stuff on there, and I found this out when I took a college class some years back, that there's a .com, and there's the .orgs, and there's the .edus, and there's the .thegovs. So in that order, to me, is how deep the BS is, okay? Also, I go and look for different sources of this same thing. People are going to freak out. I watch Al Jazeera sometimes. They're actually quite good at reporting things. It's a different take on what I see on various news outlets. I think you have to go and look at several different things and make an informed decision. And then I'm still skeptical. But also, if several people that I find that are extremely intelligent, if they tell me something, I pretty much say that's pretty much gospel, because I know if it's off the if it's off the cuff, do you?
Okay, you're not really completely certain, but there's a believability degree that gets you to believe. Okay, Maria, how do you recognize something as the truth?
Well, yeah. How can you be absolutely 100%?
You can't.
That's an impossibility. But there's so many different gradients and levels of truth, right? We have like a spiritual truth. We have physical, scientific truth. We have different truths. There's different ways about going about that. You know, for me, the easiest is scientific truth, right? Body of replicable evidence. There's personal truths, things that align with my values and, you know, that are just treating people well, even maybe when it's difficult. And then, you know, there's truths like you say, like the .edus and the .govs. I mean, there's things that we collectively should agree upon.
So is it a matter of trust then?
Yes, you have to put trust in something.
Okay, what do you think, Gregor?
Yourself. Trust,
component of how we recognize the truth?
Yeah, that's true. There are certain, you know, I mean, the thing about the truth is, and this is not my definition. Someone else came up with this. They said that's like they're looking for the definition of, looking for string theory these days. String theory is the big thing, the explanation of everything, right? But how will you know when you've got it? Well, it will be so simple and so elegant that you will look at it and you'll say, well, of course. You know, and Occam's razor also goes back to this. It says, if you come up with a solution to something that has four parts, and I came up with a solution to something that has three parts, mine is better because it has fewer parts. Get rid of that fourth part that's not doing anything. So the idea is that, where is it? Where was he going with that? I'm sorry.
Parsimony.
Splashed. I'm sorry.
Parsimony. Simplistic.
Yeah. You know, the two and two are going to be four. It doesn't matter whether I add it, whether you add it. There are certain universal truths. The problem that we run back into is our perception, where we have experiential levels, where we come to that. I think the truth is very important. I think the people that are willing to compromise and just be told what they want to hear do that to their detriment. I always personally, I find when I am confronted with something that turns out to be false about myself, I'm surprised because I think I do pretty well. But at the same time, I like that opportunity. I like the opportunity to, oh, guess what? You need to retrench your thinking a little bit because some prejudices are coming through that you thought you didn't have. Guess what? You do.
You try your best, but if you see something that isn't working out, then you try to fix that as well. Okay, some lies do manage to reveal a whole lot of truth. For instance, when Trump tells a crowd at a Florida rally, which he did last night, that you can't buy groceries without a photo ID, the truth is pretty obvious, right? Actually, there's kind of two truths coming out of that.
That is a lie that is meant to do nothing but agitate his base into a frenzy. That's all that's for. And that's not right at all because he's inciting.
Okay, but the truth, there's a truth that's coming out of that lie that I heard. I don't know if any of you guys, I'll tell you before we run out of time. What do you think about that? What that truth might be, Maria?
What are you referring to? Like getting at voting and things like that?
Well, he said that, you know, you can't buy groceries without a photo ID.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a blatant lie.
Right. It's a blatant lie.
Right.
But the truth about that lie is that, I have to tell you, Trump doesn't go grocery shopping.
He doesn't have any idea on
what it's like to be a shopper in a grocery store.
Yeah.
And he probably never uses a credit card either. All right. This has been a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much. Neil Lacey, Maria Couch, Gregor Rakowski, all the way down from Talkeetna. Thanks for coming down, buddy. And to you listeners out there, thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters.